Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Like Steven, we sell scented sweatshirts. And the Shopify customer service team helped us so much. And I would say we had questions at 3, 4 a.m. They were there.
For sure. And I think it's why they help turn browsers into buyers.
Totally.
So if you want to manufacture true crime leggings in Guatemala and sell them in Indonesia, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bookclub, all lowercase, today.
That's shopify.com/bookclub. shopify.com/bookclub.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Celebrity Book Club.
Oh, thank you for coming to meet me at the old Crow's Head after my performance of A Midsummer Night's Shorebridge.
Judy, you were motherfucking magnificent in that. Tell me this. Theater is awesome. It's your thing, okay? It's your bag. But will you do fucking Shaco Law with me?
Oh, Harvey Weinstein, I'm terribly, terribly flattered, and thank you so much for coming all the way to Nightstitch to see me. I never thought that American of your stature, and I don't mean that as a fat joke, would come all this way
to see me. I'm a fat fuck, for sure. Oh. I'm a horny fat fuck who loves theater and loves Judi Dench.
You've got such a wicked sense of humor.
I wish I was older so you'd go for me.
Oh, now, Harvey, come now. I've heard you like them quite young. Tell me about this film you want me to work on. You know,
this is an amazing fucking story. It's about a woman in fucking France. You're familiar.
Oh, God, yes.
And Gaul. She makes this chocolate, but the town doesn't respect her. They all think she's a fucking slut. And you're this cranky old fucking bitch.
Oh, so it's sort of like Taming of the Shrew, bitch, yes.
Exactly.
With a small business kind of
attitude. It's about small businesses that don't use Shopify.com. So she makes this fucking chocolate, and it just has this crazy shit in it. And it makes you get fucking high.
Oh, dear. I must confess, I've never done a drug other than opium with the Queen once. It was 1942, and we were on safari doing a royal production of Shakespeare in West Ghana. And after one of the performances, the president came out of his palace, and of course there was a coup going on, so he was a bit rattled. But he offers us some opium, and it was some of the most delicious opium I've ever had. So it was sort of like that, Harvey.
Fuck. You have so many sick stories. You're one of the only women I'd rather hear talk than fuck.
But I suppose...
Tell me, did you and the Queen, did you guys, you know...
Harvey?
A little something going on in the tent?
A dame never reveals her secrets.
Oh, will you do chocolat?
I suppose I'll do your little chocolate film, but only...
6 million.
I'll do it for 3 million, and you have to donate the other 3 million to a Shakespeare charity for girls with no teeth in Scotland.
Girls with no teeth? I like the sound of that. Oh. You got a deal.
Oh, Harvey, you'll be the death of me.
Who's that knocking at the door? It's all your friends, you filthy whore. Your husband's gone, and we've got books and a bottle of wine to kill.
It's Hollywood.
It's books.
It's gossip.
I'm shook.
It's memoirs.
It's martinis.
It's Studio 54.
It's Bellini. Celebrity Book Club. Come read it while it's hot. Celebrity Book Club. Tell your secrets, we won't talk.
Celebrity Book Club.
No boys are allowed.
Celebrity Book Club.
Buzz me in, I brought the Cuervo.
Hello, best friend. Shall I say
Hello, fellow dame.
Dame Marotta, after all these years.
Dame Horst. I really thought I'd never speak to you for the rest of my life.
Well, I was terribly incensed at a notice you gave me in 1969 after a performance of Taming of the Shrew at the Shoreditch in Alwidge in Canterbourshire at Oxford.
You know, and I have to apologize for that notice, though I've never apologized for a notice I've written before, and I usually do not like to socialize with actors and players of the company.
Of course not.
But you've really proven yourself, of course, over the last couple of years, I'll say.
Well, I'd say that you've really proven yourself, too, to be a podcaster of the utmost distinction, worthy of the Queen's bestowal of dameship.
Yes, the Queen's really what brought us together.
Isn't
she? Oh, because she was on my podcast. Okay, why are we talking? Okay, this is going to be hard.
I don't think I'm going to be able to leave the accent, darling. Yeah. I'm just going to stay here all day.
Live in it. Be the role. Commit to the role.
I've been in the role all week listening to...
Let's say it.
Siren of the stage and screen. One of the most decorated actresses in British history.
The dame of all dames.
You probably know her from her spat of like Oscar-nominated films in the sort of Y2K era. Chocolat.
Shakespeare in Love.
Iris.
Elizabeth.
Notes on a Scandal. Mrs. Brown.
Oh, you might just know her from her long-running BBC television show,
As Time Goes By. Or perhaps you know her from her decades with the Royal Shakespeare Company and the National Theatre. As one of the most decorated actresses of Britain's theatre scene, of course, we're talking about none other than Dame Judi Dench.
And her book,
And Furthermore.
The best title ever. And it's lowercase, darling.
Yes.
And furthermore.
It's lowercase to suggest that there's more to come. Right. There was more before and there's going to be more after.
Because, you know, she begins and ends the book saying, well, I hope this isn't the end.
No, I'm going to be working up to the very last minute.
And furthermore.
She's 89 now.
No, and she says, actors don't need to retire because there are roles in wheelchairs and beds.
That part killed me. I love when she said that. She was like, retirement is for if you have a job that you have to do, like you work in a factory, you work to make money. You don't like your job, you retire, you go do the things you want to do. I'm already doing what I want to do. So why would I retire?
Why would you retire?
I can go play some old dotty batty woman in a wheelchair. What's wrong with that?
Which is so cool. And so I said to myself today, 3 p.m., just having some tea, I said, I'm never going to retire.
I'm having a cup of decaf Earl Grey because, you know, at my advanced age, I don't need to be this caffeinated at 4 p.m.
It's interesting because you're going through a long ride in the country. Still don't want caffeine.
I am going on a long 6-hour drive to my country home this evening.
In Cotswolds.
There's something where you can become too alert on the road and you overreact to these ghastly trucks.
You've become in your old age a little anxious on the road, haven't you?
I am. No, my dear, dear husband has to make a bed for me like a dog in the boot.
You know, I almost hit a wild turkey the other day driving.
I'd love to hear this story.
Yeah, I'll just tell it in pure American, actually. and then we'll drop it for a second
and go back to Britain.
So, you know, I was just kind of on, it was kind of a Route 66 type of road.
Sure.
And, you know, you're just going, not so fast, but fast. And then just trot, 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 wild turkey, fully walking through the middle of the highway.
Well, in the Northeast, turkeys have become, like, incredibly bold in the
past
decade.
Invasive. Well, they've been hanging out in the square.
Quite invasive. Yeah, I've seen them all over Cambridge. So just walking across the road.
Yes, you know, and so I know you're not supposed to swerve in those situations. They tell you in driver's ed.
You're supposed to, like, hit the turkey dead on?
Well, so I swerved because I was like, well, I'm not trying to kill this turkey.
Right.
But then it's like, I freaked out because I swerved and then like someone could have hit me. And it's more dangerous to swerve.
You swerved into the oncoming lane.
No, just more to the side.
Onto the shoulder.
Well, I didn't go. It was a quick swerve.
Oh.
I didn't go all the way. I stayed in my lane.
It sounds like your reaction was absolutely splendid.
It actually was. I swerved a little bit out of respect for the turkey, but then I got right back on the road. I was a little shaken.
Right, you were rattled.
And I was shaken, definitely, for the next few miles that I had to stop for an American snack.
Mm.
Yes, and I had a snack wrap of sorts.
Some sort of, like, ham creation.
No, it was a chicken creation.
Okay.
Cluck, cluck. Anyway, I almost killed a turkey. I didn't kill a turkey. I almost killed myself, my lovely girlfriend, but we all escaped well off.
Well, I'd like to congratulate her on you and your sick reaction time, it sounds like.
Yeah.
You fucking nailed it.
Nailed it. Save the turkeys. But back to Dame Judi Dench.
So what was your first
interaction with her growing up. So for me, it was the James Bond film GoldenEye, which for American boys of a certain age, which was a very, very pivotal film, 1995, relaunched the franchise with Pierce Brosnan. And she also came on as a new M. And she's so phenomenal in that film.
Phenomenal. And
she plays M over 8 films.
It brought her kind of really back into the American eye, I would say.
Yeah.
Because it was British this, British that. I never knew who she was, but like...
Because she was already like 70 at that point.
What's so crazy about this book is...
She's 90, like, from day one.
From the beginning, and she's listing so many plays, and, like, the chapters will be, like, 1960 to 1967, Shakespeare and Company, the years at Oxford, and Surrey.
She's literally doing plays in the war, like, in the middle of the Blitz.
And then, like, Vietnam War, but no war is really mentioned. She'll just be like, oh, and the countryside was absolutely ripped apart.
Yes.
But you're a little bit like, wait, are you 50 now? Are you 30 now? But Dame Judi Dench, what was my first moment with her? She's just always kind of seemed to be there, honestly.
She has this incredible line where they first meet and she goes, you don't like me, Bond. You don't like my methods. You think I'm an accountant, a bean counter. More interested in my numbers than your instincts. And then he's like, the thought across my mind. She goes, good, because I think you're a sexist, misogynist dinosaur. And she says misogynist with a
misogynist.
Z.
Misogynist.
Which is so chic. And she's leaning back in her leather executive
in her
MI5
office.
Office chair. And she's literally not moving. Like, she moves very little. And one thing that she talks about in this book that's actually quite true is the camera picks up everything.
Yes,
you can, like, emotionally shrug your shoulders and the camera will pick it up. So you need to move a lot less when you're in these tight shots because it's blown so big up. She goes, you're the size of a farm when you're on screen.
It's so funny. We actually haven't talked much, maybe, to each other about camera versus theater.
Right.
And she says, you know, all these actors these days, they wake up and they say, oh, I want to be a TV star, and then I'm going to be a movie star.
Right. And then I'm going to go do 6 weeks of a play for a gag.
Yeah, for a gag. Oh, just because, oh, oops, I did a play. And then it's back to, you know,
and they're not
situation.
Moving enough on stage because they're trained by the camera. And so they're being far too still, and their emotions aren't being telegraphed
and
to the last row.
Exactly. What's interesting is she's really basically saying, like, TV and movie acting, it's like you can shrug, and the camera picks up on everything.
Yeah.
She's almost being like, you're hardly acting. Real acting is for the stage. But then she'll also be like, doing situational comedy television is the hardest thing anyone in the entire world can do.
No, I love that she admit that because she does 10 seasons of As Time Goes By, which have you...
I watched some clips.
It's just a charming... What's insane is she's shooting As Time Goes By as she's also in like three Shakespeare plays.
300 plays. And she's like, so I'd film As Time Goes By from 5 to 7. We get off at 7. Then I would go down to the Buckingham Palace Workshop Theatre with Glahn Gildeblatter, Michael Smith, John Haddon's, Dame Maggie Smith, Vanessa Redgrave, Michael Redgrave.
We'd have two matinees, then it'd be off to the pub, fall asleep, learn my lines, call at 5 a.m., like learn the scene the next day. It's like I can barely read one book a week and you're shooting an entire episode of television and doing 8 performances of a Shakespeare play every single week.
You know, sometimes though, I think when you're busier, it's easier to be busier.
So true. Busy is easy.
Busy is easy. But give yourself one Judi Dench book to read a week, and then you're like, oh, I have to get to it.
Well, also, what's hard for us, and I'll say this, and I'll defend us to the fucking death.
Yeah, please.
Which is that...
To the throne of Queen
We're
Elizabeth.
Not just reading a book. We're reading people's entire lives often. And so, like, yes, when we do Ariana Maddox's Cocktail book, sure, I can squeeze in some other tasks that week. But when we do Judi Dench's, it's like, I'm with Judi Dench from 1934 up until 2010. It's like, I'm living 80 years in the span of a week.
I'm
like,
reading Shakespeare.
I'm kind of exhausted by all of this.
I'm watching As Time Goes By.
We're watching all the films. We're watching this television show. It's actually quite a lot
It's quite a lot. I'm going to the Royal Shakespeare Academy.
Yes.
I'm actually an understudy currently. I'll quit after this recording, but I am an understudy right now for a much
of Because we're basically doing the work that she does in the 4 months of rehearsals before the show goes on.
Dive in.
Yes. And you completely immerse yourself.
Speaking of the theater, I just a call back to another episode. Let's just, you know, blend. You know, we are robots here.
No, please, no. We don't have a formula to stick to every time. And theater is about the unexpected.
And what is more unexpected than Dame Ariana Maddox right now starring in the role of Roxy Hart in Chicago?
I couldn't believe that. It was our worlds combining in one.
Yes.
Because, of course, she did Nine, the movie musical, directed by Rob Marshall, who directed Chicago, the movie musical,
exactly.
with Renee Zellweger as Roxy Hart in the title role. And then now Ariana Madix, bartendress from Vanderpump Rules. It's so crazy how just like, okay, so anyone can play Roxy? Like,
no,
Chicago, I don't understand how she can play Roxy.
And then
we saw Brandy in,
as Roxy. And like, Ashley Simpson has played Roxy.
I mean, they're
Pamela
all singers.
Anderson
Ariana Madix is not a singer. Not. Although I will say this about musicals, because Judi Dench does a lot of musicals. And she does, what's the Stephen Sondheim one? Sending the Clowns.
Yes.
What's the name of that musical? I've seen it on Broadway. I saw it with Bernadette Peters on Broadway, which was incredible. I'm sure all these gays are listening to the podcast right now, just like screaming it. Be like, ah! Anyway, she is in that. But what's so cool about musicals is you actually don't need a great voice to be in a musical. You just need to like sing it. And she has this one line where she's like, if you can't hit the note, act like you can't hit the note.
It's like kind
it's
of
like
karaoke.
Make it part of the character so that it's the character
key.
Not hitting the note.
Right.
Rather than like, oh, she can't sing it. Which I do think is a problem with a lot of Broadway actors today. They're trying to be too singy. And they're trying to be too American Idol edition.
Because Roxy Hart, the character, would be kind of a mid-girl
singer.
She
would be Ariana Madix in real life.
Exactly.
She would be a random-ass
I want to talk about the year 2009. Because this is when I felt like was prime American Judi Dench time of her Y2K era.
Right.
And this is her talking about 9. We started working on it in August 2008, and we had a hugely good time. But it had its frightening moments. There were great musical numbers in it that we had to learn, and then go out onto set and rehearse with a lot of dancers. We're all beautiful, stick-thin Italian. Daniel Day-Lewis played the character based on Fellini, and all the women in his life were played by an international cast. Sophia Loren, Nicole Kidman, Penelope Cruz, Kate Hudson, Marie Cotillard, Fergie, the American rock singer with the black eyed peas.
I love that
and
she calls
me,
her an American
rock
singer. And then when she goes, for some reason, 9 didn't do well at the box office or with the notices. This whole book, she's saying notices, and you're keeping like, wait, what is she talking about?
And
then
reviews.
You're like, oh, it's a review. It's the British word for review. And she's always like, I hardly read my own notices. But then it's like, she's always reading her own notices.
And then this is where she goes, it now seems to be a standard requirement with a big budget movie for the cast to have to go to America and talk about it. Nicole Kidman and I were doing a string of interviews together, one after another, and one young man said to me, so it's mother's parts now, is it? I snapped back, well, perhaps that's better than grandmother's parts. Because in the beginning of the book,
there was this funny line.
Hilarious moment.
She gets cast as some mom in a Shakespeare play.
Yeah.
And then she sends a note. Everyone's always sending notes and just being like terribly polite and like putting a lot of effort
into
follow-ups.
And I sent a note to the director and I sent a note
and
to
I
the
said,
notice reviewer.
So it's mother's parts,
so
is it?
So it's mother's parts, is it now?
So I wanted to just back up for a second. So
well,
Dame
please.
Judi Dench, born in 1934 in Gloucester, Westfordshire.
It's
hard to say they all run together, these names.
She loves her mummy and daddy
and
so
they
much.
They both work in the theatre as well. And her mother is like a costume designer and her father's like a set designer, but they're also both actors.
And then like her father like left the theatre to become like an insurance man or like a clown.
Basically, this book is her having just terrible fidelity to history and wanting you to know every single person that ever had anything to do with any play that she was ever in. And it's mostly her listing the names of theaters and actors and
directors.
And just here's a quick sample. The Oxford Playhouse is a notoriously hard theater to be heard in, especially under the circle. She used to do that most irritating thing, but of course the best possible thing, when you would say something like, pass me that book. Frank would shout, pass me the what? Well, let me hear it then. He had a gift for casting, and that company included Joseph O'Connor, who I'd met in the York Mystery Plays, James Cranecross, with whom I'd just worked, John Moffat, who would also become a great friend, Roger Livesey, Elizabeth Sellers, John Standing, and John Turner. Frank had also been a keen eye for European plays that had never been seen in this country. I'd missed out on Three Sisters the year before, when Tyrone Guthrie had asked me to go and play Arena at his brand new theatre in Minneapolis. But I'd just signed the contract with a short-lived shot the dock. The Oxford production happened to be Frank's very first Chekhov, and it was a great success. It was just like, somehow, while describing one play, you've listed
four other plays, five other theaters. She'll talk about all the plays that everyone else in the company did, and then also all the plays that the person directing has directed. And what's crazy about reading, and furthermore, is it takes age apart, really.
Yes.
You know, because Dame Judi Dench, people do think of her as Dame Judi Dench.
I mean, I was thinking of her as 80 the whole time. But
same. That's it was her. I was like.
But it's a little less like Judge Other. I guess Judy is just an old name. Like Judge Judy Judge is also Judy, permanently
know,
65.
Know, Judge Judy is permanently 55 and Dame Judi Dench is permanently.
72.
Yes, 72 to 82.
But she did play Ophelia, of course, and she did have these other roles when she was younger.
Judi Dench young kind of looks like, I don't know, almost like a more lesbian Mia Farrow.
I 100% agree, yes.
With her little pixie cut.
Yes. It's a bit of an upper class kind of nose, even though
yes.
she's sort of terribly in the middle class, I would
she's
say.
She's terribly middle class, but I think because since her parents were so theatrical, it's always this obsession with Shakespeare and...
Well, I mean, reading this book,
Chekhov.
You know, I had to wonder, there's so many differences, right? There's the difference between what people were like in the 60s and 70s and now. There's the difference between America... And Britain.
England.
And there's the difference between like being in the theater world and not being in the theater world. Because part of you reads this and you're like, wow, like Britain is so much more culturally fancy than America. And they care so much more about literature over there. And partially because they have a history that we don't. And so like people read Shakespeare and they read plays. And like there is a middle class market for theater in the way that there isn't here. Like, yes, tourists come to Broadway and they go
right.
see musicals.
Right, the
middle class
market is like getting tickets to Schacht and coming here and seeing Schacht, but it's like you're saving up for Schacht the whole year.
Right, whereas like there's literally in Birmingham, in Oxford, in Stratford, in like smaller, in York, like in a smaller city, there is a year-round demand for Shakespeare plays.
Right, people are seeing them
I
all
mean,
the time.
I mean, we do have like repertory theaters and community theater all over America.
I mean, I saw a wonderful community summer stock production of the Addams Family musical this summer.
Oh, high art indeed.
Yes. Well, I would say actually more of the, I feel like general middle class people go see stand-up in America.
Yes.
And like would see that more casually. But I feel like when we went to England, I just got the vibe that people were just more ready to go see
a play.
A play or a Tuesday.
And I also think that there is, I think, just in the national consciousness, because British national identity is more of a thing and British national history and culture is more of a thing, that like, because the way she talks about it, and this is also maybe a fault of the book a bit, but the way she talks about Shakespeare and all these plays, it's as if you are 100% familiar.
Yes.
She's like, so of course the scene when Iago comes in, and as you know, in the Shawwich Theater, they have a terribly, terribly small underground area for the actors to get changed. You're like, no, I actually don't know, but the narrowness of the staircase at the Oxford Theater, like that you're
she's
acting
talking,
like everyone's familiar
she's
with.
She's talking like how we'll literally all talk about Friends. Right. And be like, okay, but the one where they're bringing up the couch.
Right. And Friends is, of course, American Shakespeare, and it is canon for most
is.
Americans.
No, and I found myself also,
in a way that
you know,
12th Night is for them.
Quoting, you know, a Seinfeld or a Friends when you're like the one where, or, you know, when Jerry visits his parents in Florida. It's these simple things that happen in life that I will refer to an American sitcom.
Mm-hmm. And that isn't to be ashamed of.
No, I'm not ashamed of it at all.
Because that is also culture. And as you know, it is so difficult to play in a sitcom.
As she says, because it's the timing. And also they rehearse. She goes, and then you rehearse. And you're only rehearsing for a few hours. And she was also, when she does As Time Goes By, and the director is like, okay, we're like done for the day. And she's like, aren't we going to rehearse for like 13 more hours? And he's like, no, I don't
no, bitch,
want.
Like, you got it. We're wrapping.
You got
we're
it. We're
on.
Wrapping. We're moving on. Like, I don't want you to get stale. And she's like, oh, okay.
I think one of the other reasons that comedy is actually more difficult than drama is because I think that the range of choices that can elicit a laugh is actually maybe a narrower range. Whereas drama, it's like, you can say like, well, I chose to do it that way, like da 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 da, because it doesn't need to get a reaction. But if it doesn't get a laugh, yeah. then it literally doesn't
then
work.
Then it dies.
And so like, it needs to be funny. And like, the drama doesn't have that demand.
She says this very interesting thing when she directs a play for the first time, which I found quite interesting. And she was like, I'm directing, so now I know how to act. Because she was like, when you're an actor, you know, you all leave the stage and you go talk shit about the director at the pub. You know, it's like the boss.
Yes. And now you're mean mommy.
Yeah, mean mommy. And then now she's the director. She's like, oh, I thought I could just go home and now have a night.
But
have
then
some
she
tea.
Goes home and she goes, it's 7:05. And I'm thinking, oh, they're going on right now, aren't they? Because I guess when you're the director, you don't go see it every night if it's up for like 8 nights a week. Like,
right.
You know,
but and then she also says, oh, I know how to talk to a director, because a director has to be noticing every single thing someone's doing.
Well, and she immediately can tell when actors are lying, when they're always like, but I've been working on this all night.
But of course, you haven't been working on it all night at all. You don't know your lines cold. And now she can see through them.
And then like now she realizes, you know, when you're begging and harassing the director, how it feels. And she's like, and when you're an actor, you come to rehearsal and you're like, I'm going to do this new thing where I look to the left and it's going to like shake everyone's bottom so much. And you want the director to notice.
I miss the theater. I miss it terribly.
Well, but go back to it, darling.
Oh, I actually had a dream last week that I was doing a play and went up on my lines. Isn't that crazy?
It's actually not that crazy. Okay, a gay guy had a dream he was in a play. I'm shocked.
Celebrity Book Club.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell.
And when those outdoor outfits are scented, like Steven, we sell scented sweatshirts. So we put those on Shopify, and the Shopify customer service team helped us so much. And I would say we had questions at 3, 4 a.m. They were there.
For sure. And I think it's why they help turn browsers into buyers, which is something I look at. But I'm a data nerd, so
totally.
You know, that's
and
just me.
Look, if you are like so confused by the data, let me just tell you this. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. We love to hear that, right? Okay.
So if you want to manufacture true crime leggings in Guatemala and sell them in Indonesia, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/bookclub, all lowercase, today.
That's shopify.com/bookclub. shopify.com/bookclub.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Memorization, as someone who did a lot of high school theater, and I hardly did any high school theater, it always felt the scariest thing.
Mm. That you're going to go up on your lines, so we say, in the business.
And then it takes you out of the acting.
And that's why you have to know it cold before you can do it. No, I mean, she says at one point, she's like, I memorize my lines by osmosis. She's like, I don't know how it happens, it just kind of happens. Whereas like my husband, Michael, who is also an actor, is like up all night in the bathtub,
reading the line,
with
acting.
The cat in the garden, just like working so hard to memorize those lines cold.
When I do memorize, say, for a show, something, if I have a poem or a part or a small television part, I read it over and over and over and over and over. And then I walk around and I'm talking it and then go back to
like
reading it over
good
and
at
over.
Being off book, though. I feel like you can get off book pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm saying in high school I was.
You were more terrified.
But now I think I'm much better at it.
For the play that I was in recently, mm-hmm. which I believe you weren't there, but you missed it. You
no,
missed the show.
It was sold out. The notices were so amazing.
Yeah, the notices were amazing. It was sold out. It was a limited run.
But I did this thing where I recorded myself doing the part, like, as an MP3. And so then I was, like, listening to it in my head.
Okay.
So I'm listening to my performance of it and then just, like, mouthing the lines along with myself in my ear.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Which was quite useful, actually. And then I could be at the gym just, like, listening to my own voice.
The dream, isn't it?
Isn't it the dream? Luckily, I also have a podcast that allows me to do that.
Yes,
as well.
So talk. Osmosis. Oh, and by the way, we listened to, I would say, half of this book, if not all, on audio.
I did the entire thing audio because I literally could not find this in the library. It's a hot item.
I did find it.
And
it is
read
library.
By fellow British actress Samantha Bond.
And you lose yourself in the middle of the audio where you just kind of assume it's Judy because you're like, well, it's just some old-ass British bitch.
Sure, go on.
And it's so interesting how, because she mentions Samantha Bond throughout the book.
Right,
and it's
and
like
you're
these
like,
little
wait a
things
minute.
For Samantha Bond.
You know, she's leaving little Easter eggs. Well, she loves Easter eggs. I mean, the glove. Her long-running hijink with that other actor where they always give each other a black glove.
Terrible practical joke.
She's a big practical joker, which is also a thing that I think actors maybe don't do anymore. But
I feel like American actors will be so like, George Clooney will just like...
He got everyone a whoopee cushion like at the rap party or whatever.
And it's always like, Ryan Reynolds did the craziest thing on the set of Migration, like Barnyard 5.
But this is more like intellectual and ribald and yet also so physical, where it's like she and this other actor have this thing where they have to like somehow surprise each other in a live performance with like a black leather glove. And like it goes on for years and years,
years. And they're always just being black leather glove.
And then it's always showing up like in a bouquet of flowers that's supposed to like be on stage and a production that one the other one is doing like on West End. And then there's the time later on when like... The guy who always has the gag with her gets Kevin Spacey on the set of The Shipping News, but they're filming in Nova Scotia. And then Judy is like, has to go use this outhouse for a scene, and she's like peeing in an outhouse. And then like Kevin Spacey, being the creep that he is, puts a black glove on a broomstick, sticks it under the hole, and like tickles her bum with the glove.
She has a frightful scream. Can you imagine doing that to Dame Judi Dench, putting a black glove on a broom and tickling her bum while she's in the outhouse? Takes balls.
It takes balls to tickle a dame.
It's so crazy because also there are like... are such big moments in her life that she really passes over in the book because she's too busy listing plays.
Because she's committed to craft.
Yeah, she's just being like, well, so the day, of course, that we were opening at, like, Sir Bout-a-Lot was, of course, the day I did get damed. She's just like, I went to go get damed and for an afternoon.
And she spends half the dame story talking about how there was that other like redheaded Scotsman who is getting knighted for helping those poor mums on the ferry. And like also as if we all know about like the great Aberdeen ferry disaster of 1981.
Course.
And we're just like, oh, well on you, mate. Well on you.
But yeah, she's never, which is, I feel like, very dame behavior. She's not like...
She literally only cares about the work, and that's why her work is so good.
She's not being like, can you believe I was damed?
But so she starts dating this other actor, Michael, and they're both in productions. And they're like at Oxford and at Stratford. And she does not talk about her personal life pretty much at all in this book.
No.
She does never reference having sex. She does reference a reporter asking her once when she lost her virginity, and she's so offended.
She's just being like, and that was the last time a reporter has ever asked me a personal question. These tabloids.
But it's so
which
weird.
Is funny because Britain has like the naughtiest tabloids of them all.
But and she's so ribald and is doing like bum tickling
okay,
gags.
But here's
with
the
gloves.
Thing if we can I just wanna close the thread on the gag for a second. Like I do think Americans do like crazier gags probably actually in films than like her just being like me and this actor put on a black glove for 40 years. Because it's like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito are like filling cigars with weed on set.
And what Val Kilmer did that thing to Tom Cruise or whatever that like Tom Cruise did not like.
It usually has to do with drugs and alcohol and chicks.
But I also think that maybe that's just not done that much anymore. And it's like,
I think it was very 90s heyday blockbuster.
I mean, like, I don't think
people would be sued. No, like, Zendaya
I don't think
is
Selena
not.
Selena Gomez is pranking Zendaya.
Zendaya pranking Chalamet on the Dune set.
I'm talking about the
80s and 90s and kind of
which
the heyday.
Which were more hijinks. Those were the hijinks decades.
But no, I could tell when the marriage part was coming because she's just listing play. And then she's just like, so British. She goes, and then something quite nice happened.
In my personal life.
And I met Michael and she's basically just like, well, and then we started
spending
courting.
More time together. Like, she was always using metaphor and just being like, and he would come after every performance to the pub. And it was such a hilarious practical joke that he came to a different pub and said the name of the other pub one time.
Yeah, like,
because we had always went to that
it?
Other pub. And so then they're in Australia, like, touring with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and he proposes in Adelaide.
And she knows it's going to happen.
And then she goes, no, you can't do it now. The weather's too nice. You must do it when we're back in England and it's rainy, because then I'll know it's real.
So British, right, that he's not just swept up by the amazing Adelaide weather.
Which I kind of loved.
And then the other kind of personal part in the marriage is basically they get this castle in England and they move in both of their parents.
And then she goes, like, she rarely gets political, but then she has this huge opinion and she's just like, it's terrible and shameful when people put their parents in a home. And anyone who has the ability to should stay with their parents and take care of them as they took care of you as children. And I can think of nothing better than us all living together in Surrey as a family.
No, and she's being like,
all generations under one.
She was like,
roof.
We had the most fun we have ever had. But then she goes, and of course I was sobbing alone in the bathroom each week, but the fun outweighed the sobbing. And it's like, okay, it sounded like you actually were being so like Emily Gould vibes and like in the bathroom in your like stone cottage, like sobbing, being like, I'm going to fucking kill my mother-in-law. And like, I'm sure she's stepping out of being like, onwards.
Tea, onwards and on upwards.
A pot of tea, anyone. I'm going to go to the garden to rehearse my lines. And then she's like, and then I did get pregnant. And then, like, so British, her daughter is named just like Trisha, but they call her Finty.
I'm just like, wow, I can't think of like a less beautiful name for a girl.
Finty.
I mean, I guess it's
kind of cool.
It's a little tomboyish,
yeah.
I guess.
No, she's a redhead too. And she has this kind of like rough and tumble scrapes.
Yes, it's
a redhead,
she's a scraped
sand,
up,
sandlot,
thin redhead
cricket.
Tomboy. Always in the trees.
And, you know, another personal thing that happens to her that's quite sad is basically Finty is having a slumber party at the castle
and leaves a candle burning because it's 1705.
And her and her gals, who knows what they're doing? And well, the fire starts.
Yes.
They lose the home. All the girls, of course, were slumbering downstairs, so thank God they're okay. But,
well, this is crazy. The fire department came and put it out, and then it like went back up again later.
I mean, it's those old homes, and that's why I'm not buying a country castle.
Because of all the old timber.
Well, and remember,
like a matchbox.
You know, a woman I used to clean for said, do you want to buy my chateau in the south of France?
And you said I would, but I can't because
it's a fire
hazard.
It's
a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah. Now, I didn't have the funds together at the moment, but I also didn't. Yeah. And then Michael sadly does get the cancer. And
it's
he passed.
So sad. But then he gets like knighted by the Pope the day before he dies. Same. And she's like, at that point, he could no longer travel to London. And so we did like the night ship like at home. And he said to me, I wish I could have a rerun of this day forever. And she goes, me too. He died the next day. And then she's off and she's like, and then I shot Tomorrow Never Dies with Jonathan Madden.
And she's like, and I actually hated the way Jonathan Madden directed.
Wait, that was tea that she
Yeah, she really
said,
goes off, I would
say,
the most.
She kind of says she loves everyone, but she was like, the director of Tomorrow Never Dies, like, I fully hated.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing Bond film, which is all about the media and has this sort of Rupert Murdoch character as the villain. And Sheryl Crow does the theme song.
The Sheryl Crow theme song is so good. And that's kind of the funny things about film is you never know the drama.
Know what's going on. Wait, so this is the thing where he sends a car for her, but there's like a lorry breaks down.
So there's a lorry breakdown.
There's like a lorry traffic and she's late, but then he's so mad at her for being late. And it's like, it's literally Dame Judi Dench. You could be mad at her for being late.
It's so crazy. It's like, okay, you're just a director.
You're a random director who's like,
who got the sequel. Yes, like, it's an amazing film, but like,
you're making like a big budget, a non-prestige like blockbuster
film. And you're
film.
Yelling at Dame Judi Dench for being caught in traffic. I was like, only a man.
Only a man
would do that. But it's insane. So she calls, like, you know, one of the production people, and she's like, we're in a lorry accident. And he, like, still freaks out on her. But then another thing that he would do, which she hates, which is very untheater-like and very film and the constant Hollywood of changing, is that they would shoot a scene. She gets home at 10 p.m. She's learning her lines for the next day. And then at 10:30 p.m., he would deliver a whole new set of scripts of rewrites. And she would have to be on set at 5 a.m.
At the same time, though, it's like, she's not in every scene of the movie.
No, I'm
a little bit like, M is only in three scenes. So it's like,
it's very, like, the line is changing from just like, hello, Bond, to like, Bond.
Yeah.
You're not going to Russia.
And she's just like, oh, these rewrites are awful. It's just like, I think you can handle the rewrite of Hello Bond to Bond. She does have this kind of fun feminist streak to her where she's always like ribbing men, and like she's a lover of men and she's an admirer of, you know, great male playwrights and directors, but she also like loves her fellow dames, and she likes that, like, to kind of like take men down when their egos are so fragile. And whenever she sees that someone has like a weakness, she like likes to exploit it, because like ultimately it brings everyone closer together.
I think honestly her best point in this entire book, and furthermore, is when she's talking about directing and she's talking about humor. I think again with the situated comedy, humor is a throwaway, but she's like, when you're giving critiques to people, the only actual way to get through to someone is humor, because then they'll change. If you make someone laugh, they can see your point.
Yes.
But if you're just critical to them,
yes,
someone gets defensive and they're like, blah, 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 blah.
You have to get them on your side. And humor is how you do that on a set. And that's why she loved working with Pierce Brosnan, who he had a great
amazing
laugh
sense of
very
humor.
Very self-deprecating.
Do you think Pierce Brosnan is a homosexual, darling?
Absolutely not.
Oh. I think he's fiery and...
There isn't a gay bone in his body. I don't really see that for him. Wait, just to circle back 1 second about forgetting lines. No. When she forgets that one line and the importance of being earnest, and then a theater goer writes her a letter that says, "You ruined my Christmas."
The theater goers in England are so crazy. Like, there's this one role where she smokes during it. And I think this is also what happens when actors get so famous that you are the person.
Oh, they think that she smokes rather than the character.
Oh,
smokes.
She's in Absolute Hell in 1995.
Oh, which is one of her favorite plays. And she goes, if I could be in it every day, I would.
Here she is smoking. And people leaving the theater were like, were disgusted. They were like, I can't believe Judy was smoking. And like, she was like, they couldn't get it. She was like, I was acting. You were at the theater.
Right. And like, there's this mix of the theater goers being incredibly informed and like very, very familiar with all the material, and then just like being absolute rubes and not understanding it at all. And then there's also the tension of her like becoming famous later in life and
it's
people knowing
like,
her for movies and being like, do you ever do stage? And she's just like,
are you kidding? I mean, that's very to us when people are like, so wait, have you ever like heard of like comedy?
Right. They're like,
and we're like, we're more than.
Yeah. They're like, oh, would you ever do stand up? And you're like, well, I did for many years until I was summarily dismissed from the industry and forced to go into podcasting.
It's kind of like the beginning career and the end career is similar, because when she was cast as whatever, the lead in some goddamn famous play, and the reviewers were like, I can't believe this unknown bitch is playing, you know, this main role.
And then she's just like, I couldn't be more.
And then that man apologizes to her years later. And then, of course, she's so well known.
There's a list of people at one point that just ends with the name Vivian Pickles, which I was like, at a certain point, the British names are like, these can't be real people.
Nope.
Before we talk about Cats and how she couldn't be in Cats because she broke her Achilles tendon. And she didn't want to go to the premiere of Cats because she thought she would cry because she was so sad that she wasn't a part of it.
And then she was finally cast
as Old Deuteronomy in the movie.
In the movie, and she got a Razzie for it.
I didn't realize that like that was like such an insider gossip.
No, that she had been like
tea. Like, fun Easter egg for theater fans.
I want to talk about Hollywood for
a
second. Yeah, so
she wins the Oscar for Shakespeare in Love, which is on screen for all of 8 minutes, darling.
Seeing Shakespeare in Love, that changed me, because, again, I, as a middle schooler, I rejected Shakespeare. I said, that's for nerds. Mm. And then seeing Shakespeare in Love, seeing Dame Judi Dench, seeing Dame Gwyneth Paltrow.
Right.
Well, and of course, Shakespeare in Love is not a Shakespeare play.
Exactly. But it brought me into the genre of it all.
Yeah, and did you then go, like, pick up a copy of Twelfth Night at the bookstore?
Not at all, but it made me appreciate it. Honestly, the thing that made me appreciate Shakespeare is realizing all the best early 2000s Y2K movies are all Shakespeare plays. Oh, She's All That.
10 Things I Hate About You. Clueless.
Clueless is Jane Austen.
Sorry.
But it's basically the same thing.
Yes. What I love about her trip to the Oscars is, like, she is such an accomplished actress of the stage and screen at this point, and yet she gets to do all these fun things for the first time, so she's actually quite humble and excited about everything, and it's so cute to see someone with such gravitas be, like, excited about going to Hollywood. She's also literally hasn't been to America for 38 years at this point. She's like, I hadn't been here since I was in A Lost Man in 1969 on Broadway.
No, because she's literally in plays all the time. She has no time.
Every single day she's in a play. When she goes to the Oscars, Harvey Weinstein does a buyout of the play she's in, of like A Midsummer Night's Dream or whatever, on the West End.
Of like 2 nights.
So she can fly to LA for literally 2 nights, and then she's back on stage 2 days later. It's actually insane.
Commitment to the theater.
Okay, I feel like she likes Harvey Weinstein, or it's like... Oh, so Harvey Weinstein gave her all these roles?
Yes. Chocolat, Shakespeare in Love.
Iris. Like, these were all Harvey Weinstein joints. I feel like there's this thing where it's like, it's because she's old and he didn't want to fuck her.
Yeah.
That, like...
I think it's like they had a special relationship.
Yeah.
That she wasn't threatened by him. He was giving her roles without her fucking
and
him.
And she was already famous, so he didn't need to be like, honey, I'll make you famous. It's like...
And he was probably groveling to her.
Yeah.
So.
And she gave him some gravitas. Meanwhile, he's like raping all the other 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
And as we know, and we won't say, not every actress was rejecting her residences.
And like, was Cate Blanchett like telling Judi Dench, being like, well, you know, Harvey? And she's like, I don't want to hear it.
On the set of Notes on a Scandal.
Yeah, she's like, Cate, I just don't want to hear it.
I feel like Cate...
She's also like, I don't want to talk about it.
I don't think
disgusting.
She's gossiping.
No.
Cate seems honestly like a bit of a bore. Cate Blanchett doesn't get a lot of, like, discussion in this book. Like, she talks about that movie and how it was a difficult role, and she's like, and Cate's a lovely, lovely actress.
Because I think Cate is so serious, and Cate is in her trailer.
Yeah.
Reading the lines.
I think Cate's, like, deadly serious, and she's not playing pranks at all.
With the way Cate Blanchett is not playing pranks.
Okay, wait. Get to the Oscars part.
Okay. Countdown to the Oscars. We'll do a back and forth here. Or will I be the only unlifted face in Hollywood? Zandra Rhodes and Donatella Versace both offered dresses. But I shall go to Nicole Fahey and keep it in the family. Mrs. David Hare, parentheses. On Friday... At the half a huge bouquet of blossom and yellow roses arrived at the theater and a bottle of Cristal champagne from Dustin Hoffman, who had seen Mrs. Brown and is very complimentary. I shall be able to write a book entitled My Life with the Stars. March 3rd, interview with Marilou Dent down the phone to LA. This may be indelicate, but you seem to have a lot of energy for someone of your age. Veteran, old god, etc. Tuesday, 10th March. 8 a.m. Had to talk to James Naughty. I couldn't spell Naughty. For the Today program. And of course, she spells program the British way. Program.
With like seven M's.
Live. I mumbled a lot and didn't really come up with the goods. 4:30 to Fabot's place to meet Nicole. She'd done several designs and we chose one of them. We decided on the gray organza, not the frost.
Fitting at 117B Fulham Road when Nicole and Barry and the design team saw a wonderful trouser suit. They are losing it for me. Got a four-leaf clover from Van Cleef and Arpels for luck. Turn down Asprey! Which is like another jeweler.
Jeweler, yes. Diamonds.
Critic Circle lunch. They all wish me well. Fitting with Nicole, 4:30. Tor faxed me through diamond earrings from VCNAs. Chose figures of eights. They are only $50,000 a pair. Long talk to Bihor, who rang to wish me luck. Note from Liam Neeson. Cards. Flowers from Pauline and John Alderton. GPS Jeffrey Palmer and Sal rang after the show when I'd taken my wet dress off. All the crew and company were waiting with champagne and a lovely card. And Ronnie Pickup made a speech. Ronnie Pickup. Okay, this part's insane. So then she goes, got to Heathrow Terminal 4 and were met as we checked in. The staff at Gatwick had sent good wishes. So she's flying out of Heathrow to L.A., and the staff at the other airport is being like, we wish you well.
We wish you the best. Again, like, so British. And
but
like,
it's, like, so cute. The entire nation is cheering her on. And they're all like, go, Judy.
Because at the end of the day, people love the Oscars.
They love the Oscars, and they desperately want to be validated by the Americans. The whole world longs for
our little approval.
A thumbs up from Uncle Sam. How humiliating. And then she gets in the plane, champagne lunch. Then she goes, she gets a box of chocs with a little Oscar attached. But after that, I simply didn't have time to keep the diary. It was absolute madness. The whole thing was absolutely wonderful. But it's like nothing we do here. You talk anybody at the crack of dawn. There are hairdressers and people to do your nails, your feet, and goodness knows what arrives. Permanent orange juice and coffee and strawberries dipped in chocolate.
Permanent orange juice is really funny.
Permanent orange juice. Which has a lot of sugar, you know.
We haven't even talked about when she and like seven other dames are like shooting that movie and they're staying in Italy. And then like she goes to this hotel that's like absolutely terrible and the air conditioner doesn't work. Mm. And she's furious.
No aircon.
And then like one of the other actresses, this other dame comes up. She goes, Judy, it's a knocking shop. I've already heard three go at it since we came in. And just being like, it's like a fuck hotel for like prostitutes, calling it a knocking shop.
Which is very the film we watched over the weekend.
A room with a view. Where she plays
a total naughty,
a ribald novelist
who's always like getting gossip from like a little inn in Venice and then writing about the going ons at an inn.
Back to her being ribald yet not ribald was when they're also doing the press tour for Nine or something, and someone says to Nicole Kidman, they're like, oh, you're rather tall. And she was like, after that, we sent them on their way. And she's so offended.
It's about privacy.
Right. It's because like, can make jokes, but reporters can't ask you about your height.
Yeah, it's like her and Maggie Smith can make some jokes about maybe Liam Neeson's package.
Oh,
though
dear.
I doubt they would. But like an American reporter is like, Nicole Kidman, how tall are you? She's like, what business is it of theirs? How dare they?
Woman's height is no one's business, especially not a reporter from a foreign court.
So crazy to me that she was in Cabaret. That's actually like her biggest acting accomplishment because she is so Dame Maggie. And like for her to be in Cabaret, it just seems like such a crazy non-Judy Dench style role to me.
Because it's like so naughty and sexy. But then there's a naughtiness in so much of her roles.
Her naughtiness is like more evil. Less like
it's a little bit more
fishnets.
Like, yes. I agree. It's more of like a calculating.
Like her notes on a scandal.
Pinky in the brain.
Like, oh, aren't you a little hog?
That movie is so fucking incredible. It is the most like delicious movie. The writing is so insane. It's an incisive.
It's
commentary on like bourgeois liberalism in Britain.
Wait. One thing about that movie, the joke that everyone uses for like liberal teaching is basket weaving.
Oh, yeah.
Have you noticed that? She's
well,
like,
I feel like it's very the joke now that you would say about like getting your degree in like
gender thrifting.
Yeah, in gender thrifting. When we talked about earlier how she's such a good actress that she shrugs her shoulders without even shrugging her shoulders and the camera picks it up, there's such imperceptibilities that are so perceivable in her acting in that movie. Like when Kate invites her to lunch and you can just see the joy in her eyes, but she hides it. And you can see her character
freaking
hiding it, but also
building.
Freaking out within and being so excited. It's like, oh, it's incredible.
And it's also insane how she can go from the big theater movements to film.
But I think it's because... She was in the theater for so many decades.
And she can turn it down, but it seems...
But she can exercise that restraint.
Then when someone goes to stage, it seems so obvious to turn it up.
Mm.
And I think it's easier to turn down.
Mm. Once you know how to
keep
it up.
What turning it up is on the stage.
Yes!
Celebrity Book Club.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian. Premium cocktails on demand.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Dame segments.
Dame segments. How does she live?
What does she wear?
What does she eat?
Well, darling, she eats and drinks champagne.
At one point, she goes, I really don't like to drink much. Unless except it's champagne.
Because she's just literally permanently fabulous.
And like British, and she's having one flute that she's sipping on slowly.
But then there's sometimes like after the Oscars, she goes, I had a lot of champagne.
Where she's like, me and Dame Maggie Smith but were quite
I do think
laughing.
That a lot of champagne is perhaps like,
three,
like
glasses.
Three or four glasses.
Which is a lot of champagne.
Sure.
Because it goes straight to your head.
Right. But I call that a Tuesday night, darling.
Unless it's a very nice champagne.
Mm.
You can hardly drink it anymore.
Yeah, it's either...
You have one, I think that's good.
It can go to your head immediately and give you this kind of headache. And then if you mix it with other things, like sometimes about sinking with just champagne.
She talks about when she's doing, you know, matinees and dinner performances. And she goes, I would have a light lunch of chicken, but this one play, they treat me so well and they basically brought her lobster salad.
The gifted lobster salad.
The gifted lobster salad.
He gifted me a lobster salad every night.
And she was like, and now that is fabulous.
Wait, the part though, when she and her husband are in the same play, in the third act, he would bring the menu from the restaurant they were going to every night and like show it to her on stage and like whisper, what do you want? And she would like whisper to him her order.
That's
like
romance.
The cutest. That's like, that's
yeah.
Romance. That's
showing a menu.
So she's having like all this kind of like 80s. She's having like lettuce cups with shrimp and lobster.
And like, and yeah, champagne. Like boiled chicken in a little lettuce cup. It's all very British.
It's very British and like fish forward.
Fish based and, you know, and then she'll have lobster. And I'm sure there are these British lunches at her castle, whatever, where there is maybe a pasta that she will have a little bit of.
What does she wear? I do. She loves linen. She loves like neutral colors and creams
and grays. I mean,
now
she's so... big cream sweater that like drapes here with a possum scarf
and lots like, of little necklaces and rings and gold and mixed metals and
kind of like iconic old woman Eileen Fisher style.
Yes, but she's not dowdy.
Like, it was chic. It's a
it's
cashmere.
It's, yeah, and the linen has a bit of structure to it, you know.
And I think, as she mentioned, like she has, you know, designer friends and wives of other actors who make her these some kind of maybe stunning pieces.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, she's not, but then it's like Donatella is approaching her and she's like, well, of course, I will only be styled by my good
dear,
friend.
Dear friend.
Her house.
How does she live? You know, it's like it's a stone. So,
it's stone.
There's lots of stone.
Large
fireplaces, old cauldrons, lots of old.
But also little kitchens and big pots.
The piles of books. I mean, it's not modern, right? There's lots of old, like, delicious Chinese armoires.
Delicious Chinese screens.
And, you know, and there's like chintz fabrics on some of the rooms, and then there's lots of day beds, and there's a garden, of course.
Oh, of course, a garden, and like her little dog is fluffing through the garden, and maybe Finty's childhood art.
Oh, how lovely would that be?
Is up in maybe
and
like
obviously
one of
there's
the
like
sunrooms.
A 1,000 framed letters from Vanessa Redgrave and framed notes yeah. from like Michael Bancroft on the evening of the first performance of Twelfth Night at the Finchley Theatre in Crawditch.
And of course, there's just like first edition Shakespeare's like everywhere. You know, at the end, she says she's never done a modern American play, which is kind of crazy.
I know. I hope
I
she,
want her to do that.
Yeah,
I
wonder if she's auditioning for Slave Play when it moves to London.
She needs to like do something raw and real and like stop being polite
and start getting real duty. Well, she's like, but when then you do Shakespeare in modern dress, do they expect you to ring up the telephone?
Here's my thing about Shakespeare. All people know how to do with Shakespeare is put people in modern clothes.
Okay, I did want to bring this up because she says that their production of Macbeth that they did in Oxford.
Yes.
It was in a very cramped, intimate theater. And so the production was so intimate. But I was like, this is so Shakespeare to be like, they were in minimal dress and it was actually really intimate. And it was actually a new lens on Macbeth because you were so close to the actors and you really felt the emotion of it. And it's like, that's all people knew is pared down.
Right. It's either pared down or it's leather jackets.
Yeah.
And it's Shakespeare during CBGB era.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that Bezlerman did a great job with Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see like a maximalist, because that was like a maximalist aesthetic.
Well, and
it was also
like late 90s steampunk Blade Runner LA.
Mm. I would love to see actually a minimalist period piece Shakespeare.
Which period?
Like the 1500s.
Okay. Period.
Period, bitch.
Period. I want to see a Shakespeare that's like all in like Everlane and Cos.
Just like really good basics.
It's like base layers.
Base layer Shakespeare.
Like sweaters and like wide pants.
Right. And like Lady Macbeth is just like in a tight puffer jacket.
Yeah. It's like in a little like North Face.
I do like that thing also in Shabbat Magus. She's like, everyone has the urge with Lady Macbeth to play her as a girl boss from like day one and be too like scheming. It's like, no, she's not. You know, she's scared too. Why would she ask for help? The urge to girl boss.
The feminine urge to girl boss Lady Macbeth.
It's like, reel it in, bitch. She actually has more vulnerabilities than you realize.
Who are you in the book?
Oh, dear.
Dear. I think I'm Vanessa Pickles.
You don't think you're Roger Rees playing Curio? Or perhaps Donald Sindlin, quite brilliant as Malvolio?
I feel like you're Nicole Kidman and someone asks you how tall you are, you're about to answer. And Judy's like, stop.
And I'm like, you're right. I don't have to debase myself.
Or honestly, you're Rob Marshall, because that feels like a you casting. Of nine.
Putting Fergie.
Rock singer, Judi Dench, Penelope Cruz.
I'll take it. Greatest film.
And I'm American rock singer Fergie.
Yeah. I don't know. So I give this book, it's interesting.
Interesting, yeah.
I've had such a fun time being with Judy
being
this week.
Being with her.
And
the
exploring
actual
her films.
Book, I'm not in a way dying over, because it is, like, I love it and I love hearing it. But like the book, I'm almost giving a little bit... 3.1 notices out of 5,
yeah,
darling.
Because it is just a list of names, and like the tea is a little few and far between. And I like what she says, and yet I'm tempted to give it a higher grade because it just shows her commitment
how
to the craft.
How much she's done.
And how much it's like is just all about acting for her. And that's why the art that she's made is so incredible. I'm so inspired by her, like, her lack of narcissism. I mean, she really is just, it's about the work for her. It's not about the fame.
Literally, what, I mean, this is probably the first actor we've done that isn't just like, my childhood.
Literally.
I got this role, but I didn't want to do it. I was done doing action movies. I was done doing comedies.
Right. Literally, snooze. She's like, no, actually, I'm an actress, so I'm going to fucking work.
I'm going to work.
I'm going to work around the clock, and I'm going to like get really into the roles and be really excited by telling these stories.
So Dame Judi Dench, I knight
Dame's
you.
Dame's stories matter.
Story matter, and we dame you again.
Right, so I'm going to actually give this 3.9 sunny proposals out of 5.
Mm. And remember, everyone, never let your kilt get wet.
Because a wet kilt can be like a sword on the shins.
And it will cut you. Best.
Best. This podcast was originally produced as a Christmas play for children by Darby Mathers, and she did a wonderful job. She actually was with me in the Toad of Toad Hall, and she played the brave stoat. Abu Zafar was the associate producer. Him, Tony Church, and Peter Woodthorpe were my favorite actors who ever played the badger, and they played a ridiculous prank on me where they hid my knickers under the stage. And so I came on and I said, well, where are my knickers? And of course, we all rolled over laughing, but I couldn't roll over because I didn't have on the knickers. The part of Mother Rabbit, our executive producer, was played by Christina Everett. The original theme song was made by Stephen Phillips Horst, who was an absolutely lovely, lovely actor from Glasgow when he bared his chest in Merchant of Venice. Oh my goodness. It was all Charlotte could do to try to not stab him right there because the chest was so beautiful, it was gleaming in light, right? And the audience knew it.
It was originally conceived in the Aldwych Theatre on the Isle of Wight, which has now closed and been turned into a monastery by Prologue Projects. Good for them. And amen. The graphic design was done by Teddy Blanks. Teddy Blanks was such a wonderful, wonderful director. I worked with him for many, many years, and we hated each other and got along and had a terrible row at first because I didn't agree with his choices. But then he made me see the error of my ways, and I believe that he is one of the great graphic designers of Edinburgh. You can go to our patreon.com, and I know it's terrible and I don't know how to do it, but if you find your computer, one of those ghastly objects you plug into the wall and sparks and hisses and makes all of these noises like it's a train from 1910 coming through the Tsar's Russia, you can find your way to the Patreon, right? And so there, we're going to be giving you more content because I do really think that these stories matter, and so we'll keep telling these stories for you until we die. We're going to be telling these stories to you until we die, because that's what we do. We're storytellers. Thank you so much. Have a nap.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.